Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
And we are back. Crossover NBA podcast, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. Conference finals winding down. Beck, are you ready to begin the East Coast, West Coast sojourn of all this? The long trips either between, I'm just going to say it, between Golden State and either Miami or Boston. How are you feeling about that?
How dare you insult the Dallas Mavericks.
Sorry, Dallas. I'm insulting you. Yeah.
How dare you imply that they will not be the first team in the history of the NBA to come back from 3-0 and win a series?
Oh, you're picking them.
No. Unlike some people, I don't need to atone for, apologize for, or rationalize a bad pick before this series. I had picked the Warriors all the way. In fact, I think I even said months ago I thought the Warriors could go all the way, but that's neither here nor there. I'm actually just ready. You ask if I'm ready for the pinging between the I'm ready for the Eastern Conference to just put us all out of its misery, because that series, which you've been covering, thank you for jumping on the grenade there so that I could cover more fun stuff back in San Francisco with the Warriors and Mavs. Which those two games at least were at least somewhat compelling that I was at. Heat Celtics, which I'm sure we'll get into. I just want that to be over, Chris. It's not fun. It looks unpleasant. It looks painful. Everybody's hurt. I saw a score last night that I've never seen in my career. What did it end up at? 18-1 or something at one point?
Miami had 1 point through the first 8 minutes of the game.
Just bizarre. Absolutely profoundly bizarre. So, yeah. Just get that series over with, please.
All right. So, let's talk about the Eastern Conference playoffs, which really the only series with any kind of drama at the moment. Tied up at 2 going into Game 5 on Wednesday. And I wrote about this over at SI.com on Tuesday, Howard. This series has been wildly unpredictable. You've had teams, I believe, in each one of the first four games with 20-point leads. And it just, you just haven't been able to tell what you're going to get every single game. Injuries have taken a toll on this series. Tyler Hero is out now with Miami. Jimmy Butler is clearly limited with a knee injury in Miami. Marcus Smart, he did not play in Game 4 for the Celtics. Robert Williams, just at the end of Game 4, dragging that left leg around, courtesy of a lot of minutes playing on that recently surgically repaired knee. So you don't know what you're going to get in this series. But I was at Game 4 in Boston. And my biggest takeaway, Howard, is that the Celtics are just better. Like, they're the better team in this series. Like, this series is tied. largely because of what the Celtics have failed to do, and that is protect the ball in Game 3. They committed 24 turnovers in Game 3. That led to 33 points from Miami. They had the ball deflected 29 times, which I think was a playoff high for this year by Miami. They did it themselves in Game 3. Was it Game 1? You know, where the Celtics, the third quarter was like a 39-14 run by Miami. Like, the Celtics are just shooting themselves in the foot in the games that they've lost in the series. When they play like they played in Game 4, which is sturdy defensively, which they've been for most of the second half of the season, relatively turnover-free, got three turnovers in the first half, 11 overall, they're the better team. They just are. So, you know, it's 2-2 going down to Miami. The Heat have home court advantage going into Game 5, all that. I think the Celtics are fully capable of winning the next two. In fact, I would predict them to win the next two games of the series if they are healthy-ish and if they keep the turnovers low.
I used to use as a reference point when I try to explain to people and remind myself, Chris, that the playoffs are really unpredictable sometimes and that no single game is necessarily indicative of a series. We always overreact. We're always prisoners of the moment. The second a team wins by 20-something, we think it's over. They figured it out. The other team ain't coming back. And I always used as an example the 2013 NBA Finals between the Spurs and Heat, which just pinged back and forth between blowouts. It was Game 2, 19-point win by the Heat, and then the next time it was the Spurs with a 36-point win, which then swung back to a 16-point Heat win the next time. Like, it was crazy. I'm now going to substitute in as my reference point, I think, this Celtics-Heat series for just sheer unpredictability and the lesson for why we can never actually pretend we know what's going to go on in a playoff series. And injuries are part of it, Chris. I think there's other factors. These are obviously two elite defensive teams that really get after it and that will do everything possible to shut off everything you're trying to do. But I think it's exacerbated by the fact that the Miami Heat just weren't a great offensive team to begin with and are the real outlier of the Final Four in these playoffs. I was looking this up. So Jimmy Butler, you and I both know, and he's hurt right now. He's dragging a little bit. At his best, if Jimmy wants to fill up the box score, he can. It's not who he's been throughout the course of his career. He's never been a high-volume shooter or a high-volume scorer. He can bring it when needed, right? And what he's best at is scoring a little, assisting, playmaking, ball handling, rebounding, and a lot of defense and a lot of leadership and a lot of just keeping guys accountable, right? Like, I love the Jimmy Butler experience, but he's not your typical leading man in this league where massive scorers, incredibly talented scorers, usually rule the day. So I looked this up because I was curious. Jimmy averaged 21.4 points a game in the regular season. So forget about the playoff totals, which I know are higher, because that's indicative that he can score, right? That he can score big, but it's not naturally his role. He usually averages somewhere 21, 22 points a game in his career. 21.4 points per game in the regular season. I wanted to know, when's the last time somebody averaged that few points and led a team to the championship? It's been a while. So last year, Giannis, 28 points a game in the regular season. The year before, you had both Anthony Davis and LeBron for the Lakers averaging over 25. The year before that, Kawhi for the Raptors averaged 26. The 2 years before that, you had the Durant-Curry combination. Both those guys averaged 25-plus. Before that, LeBron leading the Cavs at 25-plus. Before that, Steph Curry at 24. You have to go back to 2014, another one of those Heat-Spurs finals, where Kawhi Leonard averaged 12.8 points per game in the regular season and only 14 in the playoffs. But Kawhi Leonard was playing with Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker. With all due respect to Bam, Kyle Lowry, and Tyler Hero, not the same. Before that, you got a couple of LeBron Wade years where they're both obviously big-time scorers. Dirk had only 23 points a game in the 2010-11 season, so that's a little lower, but still not as low as Jimmy Butler. And then before that, Kobe Bryant. So point being, the Heat, it's to their credit that they've made it this far. And if they somehow win this series, which is still on the table, it will be an incredible achievement. They are not built like your typical contender because they don't have that guy offensively. And it is the one thing, as you know, Chris, because we talked about it in the weeks and months leading to the postseason, it was the one concern I had with the Heat was I admire the heck out of what they're doing. I don't know if a team without an elite scorer can make it all the way in this league. But it's still possible as you and I record this.
Yeah, look, the Celtics could go down to Miami and they could play game five without Robert Williams and without Marcus Smart. Like, that would be a game changer. Derek White, by the way, great story in game four. I mean, he had played abysmally in the first two games of this series, had a goose egg in game two. But he comes out, has 10 points in the first quarter, plays all 12 minutes, plays a lot of minutes in the first half, chips in with the assists, steals, took a charge, played great defense against Jimmy Butler. That Heat starting lineup had, what, 18 points total in that game, 6-36 from
incredible.
The floor. I mean, that just was
brutal.
Just elite-level defense. That's kind of defense, though, that would take a big hit if Smart and Williams are both out. That's the defensive player of the year and second-team all-defensive big man. So Miami, very much limited. But if Boston has all their guys, I just don't see the Heat beating them. I don't think they can score enough, and I don't think their defense is as good as Boston's. As good as Miami's defense is, Boston's is just a little bit better. And I think that will play out over the rest of the series. So, yeah, I think the Celtics win the next two. I think they close the series out in six at home on Friday. And we're talking about the Celtics-Warriors series there. But we'll get to that right now.
It's feeling that way. It's feeling that way. I've got enough respect for the Heat that I'm not ruling out anything, especially, look, as we record this, it's 2-2. Maybe Jimmy and the gang all magically heal, too.
Jimmy but also, and the gang.
As you know, as you note, it's not like the Celtics are fully healthy either, but as long as they've got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown out there, they have, I think, a distinct advantage because those
this
are two-way
threats.
This
is like,
isn't
this like a Tatum playoffs. Like, I don't know if it's like a Tatum playoffs become. Like, he hasn't been great all throughout the playoffs. He's had a lot of clunkers in this, but whenever they've needed him, he has stepped up and played huge. And in games after the three losses in the Milwaukee series, he's totaled 105 points in those three games. On Monday night, he had 31 points. He got to the free throw line 16 times. That's two more than Miami got to the free throw line all game long. The Celtics were just running to the free throw line during that game. You have to expect that's going to change, too, when you get down to Miami and into game five. But Tatum keeps stepping up. And I feel like with the Celtics maybe sensing a little bit of blood in the water and the Celtics believing that with all their guys, they're the better team, I feel like Tatum is going to close the show pretty strong. That's my prediction, too.
I think my only remaining concern or curiosity is which of your like five apartments are you going to put up the SI staff at for the half of the finals that's in Boston? And like, are these pullout couches? Is it bunk beds? Murphy bed? Like, what's exactly the arrangements?
No, I don't want any of you.
Do you award Marriott points?
I don't want any of you in my house. I can't have you. I don't want to wake up in the morning to see you or Michael Pena or Rohan in my kitchen. I don't want to see it. I'm good with that. Let's move on. One of the big stories outside of the playoffs this week was the Minnesota Timberwolves hiring Tim Connelly to be their general manager. Tim, of course, longtime president over in Denver, helped build that team into the contender that it is. Never won a championship, of course, with the Nuggets, but if not for injuries, that Nuggets team might have had very different postseasons over the last couple of years. He reportedly gets a five-year deal worth $40 million that includes some equity stake within the Minnesota Timberwolves, negotiated at first with Alex Rodriguez, Michael Lowry, part of that group, and eventually closed the deal. Glenn Taylor's going to own that team through 2023. Look, it's a lot of money for a general manager. Don't get me wrong. But I'm surprised, Howard, that the Nuggets didn't go to the mat to keep Tim Connelly. He's reportedly doubling his salary with Minnesota to go there. And look, the Nuggets are not a big market franchise, but Stan Kroenke, the top guy in that organization, he's worth north of $10 billion. Like, if your GM has the success rate of Tim Connelly, who selected Nikola Jokic, selected Michael Porter Jr., selected Jamal Murray. This past year took Bones Highland, who looks like a terrific player. Go down the list. He has had great pick after great pick, no matter where they are in the draft. If you have a GM like that, you keep him, and you spend the money you need to spend to keep him. A top GM in today's league, that's what you have to pay them at this point. Why are the Timberwolves aware of that, and Denver is not?
Yeah, I'm debating which one side of this I want to discuss first. The what are you doing, Denver, or the applauding Minnesota? I guess we'll start with what are you doing, Denver. You know, to the Nuggets' credit, during the Kroenke years, they've had two of the best GMs, two of the best, you know, head of basketball ops in the NBA. They had Masai Ujiri for many years. And then when he left for the Raptors, they replaced him with Tim Connelly. And Tim Connelly's been quietly one of the best in the league. And he's the guy who, when you talk to other executives or other people around the league, and you start making those lists, those kind of theoretical, who's the top five, top 10 right now? The guy everybody says, you know who everybody's overlooking? Every year. You know the guy everybody's overlooking? Yeah, Tim Connelly. He's doing a great job. Timberwolves have recognized that. I'm sure the Nuggets have too. But you're right. They're letting him walk. And it's great to keep hiring great GMs, but they're not that easy to come by. It looks like they're promoting Calvin Booth, who's been working under Tim Connelly. And I'm sure they'll be in great hands with Calvin Booth. But you don't know until you know. Right? Like, you don't know about the assistant coach becoming head coach until he finally gets a shot. You don't know about the assistant GM becoming GM or GM going up to president, whatever the pecking order may be with the given team. But they also lost Arturis Karnisovas over the last few years. He was Tim Connelly's right-hand guy. He went to go run the Chicago Bulls. So they've had a brain drain. And yeah, I'm with you. Small market, but you're loaded. You are multi-billionaire owners, and you can afford to keep guys. And it also speaks just to your values as an organization or the way you value people. Like, this guy has put you on the map. He has made you, for certain, a perennial contender with a now two-time MVP. They'll get healthy. They'll be right back in the mix for years to come. They're talented and they're young. And Tim Connelly deserves a ton of credit for that. And I just think it's a bad sign to send to your players, to your coaching staff, to other people around the league, to people you may want to hire later. It's just showing that you didn't value a guy who put your franchise on the map and made you relevant in a way that, you know, you hadn't been for several years, ever since the Carmelo Anthony forced his way out of town. Like, and this is, you know, a team that's got a better shot probably at winning titles than what they had with Carmelo in that era. I just think it's a bad indication of the way that ownership is valuing or not valuing people.
Yeah, and on Calvin Booth, he has been someone that has been viewed as something of a rising star in ranks. The first one to identify him, actually, was Tim Connelly. I think, if I'm getting the story correct, like, Calvin was at one of those executive internship programs and Tim spotted him there, and there was something along those lines. He recognized the basketball acumen of Calvin Booth years ago. So him taking over, he has the potential to be that next top GM. But you're talking about letting a top exec get away over money. That's what this is. It's over money. And you've got a boatload of it if you're Denver. Now, yeah, you're paying out some big contracts over the next few years. Nikola Jokic likely going to get a supermax. Michael Porter Jr. operating on a big contract. Jamal Murray operating on a big contract. But when you have those types of players under contract, the best thing to have in your front office is a GM who knows how to mine talent deep in the draft, because presumably you're going to be really good for years to come. So why not have a Tim Connelly who's made hits in the second round, who's hit late in the first round? I mean, Bones Highland, I keep going back to him. Really good player. As he gets stronger in the next couple of years, he's going to be kind of a starter-level guy. And whether it's finding the Bones Highlands or identifying, you know, the Will Bartons of this league and picking them up off the scrap heaps, you need a guy like that to flesh out your roster. That's how you win championships in this league with guys like that. So I don't understand it. Now, let's move to Minnesota. Great get for the Timberwolves. It's just money. Glenn Taylor's got a lot of it. Laurie and Rodriguez have a lot of it. There's no brainer to me to bring in Tim. Now, he's inheriting an interesting team. They made their run last year, but are they a team poised to make a jump next year? I don't know. A lot of that depends on the continued development of Karl-Anthony Towns, of Anthony Edwards. You got to make a decision at some point what to do with D'Angelo Russell. Patrick Beverley, of course, is there when he's not moonlighting on ESPN. You've got to, kind of get some pieces around them. So it's a good situation to step into if you're Tim Connelly. it's not, wow, I'm going to win a championship with this group type of situation. He's got some work to do out there, Howard.
He's got work to do, but that is exactly the point of the exercise. If you're Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie, the new owners who are
Lurie, I apologize, I said Michael Lurie before. Yeah, Mark Lurie. Blank for a second there.
They're working in tandem with Glenn Taylor, the outgoing owner, right? So there's a part, kind of a power sharing arrangement in effect right now. Taylor still has last say and everything. So Glenn Taylor, who's made plenty of mistakes during his very long tenure, credit to him for putting his stamp of approval on this whole transaction during his final year or so as the lead owner there. But A-Rod and Mark Lurie, kudos to them, because Chris, they're doing what I've always said you're supposed to do if you're an owner in this league, which is recognize that you don't know anything about how to actually run an NBA team. So what should you do when you're going to hire a GM or president of basketball ops? Try to poach somebody who's already really good at it. Don't go hiring your friends. Don't go hiring, the agent that you got close to during course of years of business dealings. Don't go hiring the person who's like, you have a friendship or a business relationship or whatever. You have a trust with it. And I'm alluding to several situations here, right? You can guess what they are. But try to go get the established people first. According to The Athletic, they first tried to get Masai Ujiri, asked about Sam Presti, asked about Elton Brand with the Sixers. That's the way to do it. Go poke around first on the guys who you know are great at this and have established track records. And if you can't pry any of them free, then you ask those same guys, hey, who's the next you? Or who's the best on your staff? Who's deserving of running their own show? And that's what the Bulls did when they hired Arturas from Connolly's staff. And in this case, Connolly's not that far behind the group I was talking about with Masai and Presti. He might actually be right there with them. And so kudos to A-Rod and Mark Lurie and Glenn Taylor for making this bold move and not going cheap or not just going with the next guy you knew or whatever. Like, there's so many ways to screw this up. And this is no guarantee that Tim Connolly will go there and have the same success that he's had in Denver, but I believe he will. He's got a long enough track record. He's a great guy. Anybody around the NBA will tell you that too. There's a humility there. One of the things that he will always say, and he started saying this the minute that Jokic started to emerge as a potential star, he's like, man, come on, we got lucky. We passed on him too. Like, we got him in the second round. Everybody passed on him, including us. We didn't know he was going to become this. And that's the same thing that and this is a apropos comparison. Throughout the Duncan era, if you asked R.C. Buford or Pop or anybody there, man, you guys got Tony Parker with the 29th, 30th pick, whatever it was, of the first round. Wow, you got Manu in the second round, whatever. They'd say, listen, nothing works without Duncan. And we were fortunate enough to win, they got the lottery, won the lottery, obviously. Everything works because of Duncan. And so there was a humility that always underpinned everything there. And that's how Connolly is. That's how Tim Connolly is. He's really grounded, really humble, great guy. And that engenders, a nice working environment where other people want to be too. So you can get good people. And Minnesota hasn't been a destination for players or coaches or front office people, I don't think, in a lot of ways over the years. So, and they do have a good foundation with Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns. I do think they need to offload D'Angelo Russell. I think they probably will do everything possible to do that this summer. I'd be shocked if they didn't, frankly. And now it's just working around the edges. You've got your two pillars, I very few people in this league I would trust more than Tim Connolly to get Minnesota to make the next leap.
Hey, he's a scout through and through. That's in his DNA from his early years in the NBA. And if you're looking to find the best players in the mid first round, late first round, wherever the Wolves wind up drafting moving forward, including the second round, there are few better guys in this league to do it than Tim Connolly. So great move by Minnesota. Denver, let's hope Calvin Booth works out and that front office stays as strong as it once was. Let's finish, Howard, with the Lakers, who are whittling down their coaching search. We are in late May right now. Lakers still have that coaching opening. According to reports, you've got a finalist list that includes Darvin Ham, Terry Stotts, formerly of the Trailblazers, and Kenny Atkinson, assistant coach up in Golden State. Darvin Ham, of course, been multiple stops, most recently on Mike Budenholzer's bench in Milwaukee. To me, Howard, of this list, there's only one guy to hire, and that's Darvin Ham. Like, I think this team putting it like, for starters, Darvin Ham deserves an opportunity. He's been an assistant coach at a high level for a long time. Anyone and everyone that I've talked to about Darvin Ham say he is going to be a high-level coach. This is a widely viewed opinion throughout the NBA. He's a former player, so he's got that on his resume. I compare him favorably to Ime Udoka, who paid his dues in the assistant ranks, had a career comparable to Darvin Ham's in the NBA, and used both those tools to become a really high-level NBA head coach. I think for a team like the Lakers, like Terry Stotts brings experience, but he's not a recent player, right? He's not recently retired like Darvin Ham is. Kenny Atkinson, I think Kenny Atkinson at this point is better suited for one of those younger type teams that's rebuilding. He can certainly coach any type of team. I think he got a raw deal in Brooklyn like many do. But I think Kenny Atkinson is more suited for a rebuilding team than he is one that's trying to win a championship over the next couple of years. Darvin Ham, to me, checks all the boxes. He can connect, I think, to LeBron and to Anthony Davis because of his recent playing days. And he's got the coaching pedigree from those years in Atlanta and Milwaukee. Championship pedigree, coaching Giannis, learning the ins and outs of multiple different systems, defenses like Bud had in Milwaukee. To me, the time is right to hire Darvin Ham. And if you're the Lakers, you got to do it. If you don't do it and you go like the safe route, which I think a guy like Terry Stotts would probably be, that would be a mistake. I know that a lot of people around the league are keeping an eye on Quinn Snyder, who we have yet to really hear anything definitive out of Utah about Quinn Snyder. But I do think if Quinn Snyder's off the table, you got to jump on Darvin Ham and make him your next head coach. What do you say about that?
Well, I mean, listen, there's still some other lingering, you know, rumblings out there about, are they still kind of waiting on Doc Rivers in addition to Quinn Snyder? You know, do we really believe
that Doc Rivers is still available? Like, do you think after that press conference, he's still available?
I mean, listen, nobody ever goes into the press conference and says, yeah, you know what? I haven't decided the fate of our coach. We might fire him, might not. We might part ways. We might say he left on his own. He might tell you he wants to spend more time with fans. Like, you don't, no one telegraphs that. So there's still time for them to make a change if they want to. I'm not suggesting that they should or that they will. I'm not saying I'm hearing anything specific along those lines. I'm saying there are still rumblings out there that the Lakers are keeping an eye on Doc Rivers just in case. And similar with the Juwan Howard situation. Juwan Howard says he's not leaving. He wants to coach his kids. But is there still a possibility?
Weigh in on that, Howard. Weigh in on that real quick. Like, Juwan Howard saying no to, like, even an interview with the Lakers. Like, I get it. You're coaching your kid in Ann Arbor. I get it. But it's the Lakers. It's probably for a lot more money than you're making in Michigan, though I'm sure Juwan is well compensated at Michigan. Like, to outright turn down an opportunity to interview for the Lakers job, that was interesting to me. That to me kind of showed where the Lakers are right now in the minds of coaches with stronger options.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. And you can say that it's offset by because he's coaching his kids or he's, you know, coaching his alma mater. Like, you can spin it any number of ways. But yeah, the fact is, once upon a time, if the Lakers came calling. Now, look, Krzyzewski turned them down many years ago.
True,
He's Mike Krzyzewski, and he was already an institution at the institution where he was working. It's a little different for Juwan, who hasn't been a head coach in the NBA yet. To say no to the Lakers for any coach who has not had that opportunity at the NBA level and who's not and who's still young in their career, it kind of says something about the way the Lakers as an opportunity are perceived. I agree with you there. I also agree with you on everything you said about Darvin Ham. About it being his time, this should be his opportunity. He's ready. He's got the pedigree, all of it. I will throw the caveat on there, as I mentioned in the earlier discussion about front offices, too. There's a lot of guys who we hear highly about and think highly of as assistants, and you never know until they're actually in the chair as head coach because it's a different job. So do we know for sure that Darvin Ham would be a great coach that's going to help the Lakers figure this all out and get back to the finals? I don't know. Is he worth a shot? I think so. I think you're selling Kenny Atkinson a little bit short in that, yeah, Kenny came up as a development guy. And so that was the reputation. He's going to get guys better. That's what he did as an assistant coach. And that's, you know, what he did as head coach with the Nets. And then when they got the stars, suddenly he was out the door. But I think part of that is because Kenny Atkinson, in addition to being a great development coach with, you know, the Joe Harris's and the Spencer Dinwiddie's and the Jared Allen's, he is a guy who actually will call guys out Like, he's got an old school mentality as a coach. Now, whether guys want to hear it or not, or we'll take it from him or not, given that he didn't play in the NBA, you know, maybe that's an issue. Clearly, Kyrie and or Kevin Durant didn't you know, align with Kenny Atkinson's style. But LeBron's been a guy who's always said he wants the coach to call him out. That was what he loved about Ty Lue when Ty Lue took over, was that Ty would hold him to account. Now, they also had a bond through the NBA, through various channels, including the fact that obviously Tyronn Lue played for many, many years and played with guys like Kobe and Michael Jordan. And maybe you need that kind of gravitas that's grounded in a playing career in this league. And maybe that's why, to your point, Darvin Ham would be the better choice. I don't know that it's definitive. Atkinson does have meaningful head coaching experience in this league. Darvin Ham doesn't yet. So I don't know. And again, I think there's still other directions they could possibly go here. But I just want to add this real quick. At the end of all of this, Chris, like, we could debate like who's the best fit as a coach. You and I agree on this. It wasn't the coach that was the problem in the first place. Their defense was a disaster. It was great the first couple years under Frank Vogel because he had great defensive game plans and they had the personnel to run it. They didn't have the personnel last year. They have a completely screwed up roster right now, despite having two of the best players in the game, plus Russell Westbrook, whatever you want to classify him as now. And if they're going to keep Westbrook, I don't care who they hire. Whoever they hire is going to have the same frustration that Vogel had. And the idea that some coach is going to come in and just be nicer to Russell Westbrook or give him more latitude or give him more whatever, and that's going to solve everything, is ludicrous. So this is not about the coach. This is still about fixing the roster.
And with all due respect to Terry Stotts, one of the reasons he was let go in Portland was because in his last couple of years, the defense was atrocious. So it's not like he's coming in to fix the defense right away. Look, the Westbrook thing is fascinating. The Lakers are starting to telegraph that Westbrook will be with the team next year, in part because, unsurprisingly, teams that are talking to the Lakers are asking for draft sweeteners in the form of a first-round pick. And the Lakers, who don't have much in the way of draft capital over the next 7-8 years, don't want to give any up. So it's a rock and a hard place for LA. So the Lakers, and I think Sam Amick over at The Athletic was the first to write it, have been telegraphing that Westbrook will be part of the team that a new coach inherits coming in. And that's just not going to work. Like, bringing Russell Westbrook back would be an enormous mistake. It would put the attention on him, his fit, after the way he tattooed Frank Vogel, how he works with the coach. It would create unnecessary drama that wouldn't be worth it because we've seen what Westbrook brings to the table. We've seen he doesn't fit with these guys. For as often as Anthony Davis and LeBron and Westbrook talked about the lack of opportunity they had playing together, nobody believes that more minutes together would make Westbrook, Davis, and LeBron into this Wade Bosch LeBron type trio, into Pierce, Allen, KG. It just wasn't going to happen. That's not how it fits anymore. And Westbrook, look, he has told, you know, the Lakers coaching staff last year, they talked to Westbrook about the next evolution of his game. They talked to him about the need to become a better shooter, about the need to become, you know, a more of a sixth man type, really. And from the way I heard it, it just fell on deaf ears. Like, Westbrook didn't want to hear it. So, like, going back with Westbrook into that mix would be a mistake. That's why, Howard, like, if push comes to shove, don't just got to waive him. Like, eat the money and waive him. I mean, it sounds crazy to eat $47 million in a contract, and don't stretch him either because you don't want to carry that dead weight into future off seasons. But, you know, waive him and then go into the season with the roster without him. Like, I don't know if that wins anything either, but I'm pretty sure at this point that Westbrook, Davis, LeBron, that trio ain't winning anything. And it could probably be more of a distraction than it is anything productive.
If you are trying for the second time in two off seasons to convince yourself that Russell Westbrook is the answer after already seeing how badly it went last season, and if you think you can just put that off on what was the old coach's fault, like, what are you even doing? You tried this? Okay, you know, the whole league disagreed with the wisdom of the Westbrook trade. You believed in it, fine, but you've seen the results. At this point, you need to reckon with the reality, which is that this isn't the same old Westbrook, and the only part of him that remains consistent from when he was at his peak is that he stubbornly does things his own way and his own way only, except he just isn't good at doing them as well as he was at his peak. So why you think it's going to be different for a second season? I mean, I'm sure on some level they're thinking, we didn't have enough shooting around these guys, especially if you're going to have Westbrook on the floor with Anthony Davis and LeBron. So we'll just get better shooters this time. Okay, fine. Let's say you somehow, hit a home run this summer in your roster rebuilding. You get the shooters you need and everything else. He's still going to be a net negative on defense, Westbrook. He's still going to be ball dominant unless he's going to suddenly finally reform his game. He's still going to be a guy who has shown that he's not effective running it when LeBron's out. Like, I just don't see the upside, Chris. I just don't see where it is. No coach is fixing that. No scheme is fixing that. No offseason of signing shooters, if you even get them, is fixing that. I know there's a sense that, you don't want to trade any more picks. You're already out so many picks. Don't trade a pick just to offload him. I'm sorry, but at this stage, the key thing is, can we still make another run or two with LeBron James before he retires? And if that means sending out a pick to induce somebody to take Westbrook and you getting something more useful back, something that fits better back, then you do it. You absolutely do it. This is not about the future. You absolutely cannot concern yourself with the future. You have to concern yourself with making the most of the remaining years of LeBron's career. And those should all be with the finals in mind. And it's not happening with Russell Westbrook. So if that means sending out a pick to offload him, you got to do it.
I guess the only upside to holding on to Westbrook into the season is maybe you get to the trade deadline and some team is out there dead in the water looking to shed salary in 2023 in the way the Lakers are not looking to shed salary. That's a maybe, though. We don't know if that team is out there and could put together the kind of deal that would appeal to the Lakers to reach that $47 million threshold you got to get to with Westbrook. So I don't know. It's a tough decision, but Westbrook, it sure sounds like he's going to be there at the start of next season. Howard, we'll do it again next week when I will negotiate with you the cost of my couch for game 3 in Boston.
Marriott points. I want points.
Bonvoy points.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah,
all for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.